Greetings, brothers and sisters, in old age, sickness, and death. There's a Thai aphorism. That's a Thai phrase that is often said at the beginning of a Dhamma talk. I think we can, everyone who's been living in the community can agree that we are definitely related by sickness. There's a lot of sniffles and coughs and clearings of the throat. So that's just one of our typical reflections, that we're all subject to illness. It's an extremely rare person on the planet who doesn't at some point get ill. And I'm not sure how you relate to illness, but usually when it strikes, it's usually met by myself with a sense of, okay, this isn't, not only is this not pleasant, it's not natural, it's not how it should be. Just gotta get over it, patiently wait, and then I'll be how I should be again, healthy. And it's just a kind of a misnomer, seeing illness in that way. It's just such a normal aspect of our life. It's just a part of being human. And in fact, if we think about our health, it's constantly fluctuating, constantly going up and down, and we don't really have much control. We tend to think that we have control. So it's a very helpful reflection when we do get sick to say, oh yeah, this is normal. This is how things are, having a human body. And for some of those who've been sick, they've been, interestingly enough, getting better and then getting sick again. So that I keep hearing people say, I'm feeling much better. And then, say, oh no, now it's getting worse. So we don't even necessarily have a trajectory of how things are going to be. We think it's going to work like this, it's going to be like that, and then it just shows us again our bodies, our health, that we just don't have much control. And that's the bigger experience of our life, is this often wanting to have control. You know, just something, looking at the weather, looking at when's it going to rain. I often think, when's it going to rain? Is it going to rain a lot at this hour or that hour or this day? And there's this comfort in the prediction, you know, looking, say, oh yeah, look, it's going to rain so many inches at this time, and then it doesn't, and then there's disappointment. It was too much or too little, and it's just a constant reminder each time that we want to have control of something, or see that we think we have control, or know that we are going to be able to predict the future in some way. And I find it often laughable, because it's how often, I don't know how often you fall for it, but I fall for it a lot, thinking that something's going to be a particular way, and then it isn't. So it's a constant, we have an opportunity always to work with inconsistency and impermanence and always not being sure. In the tea time, we're talking about just how to deal with really painful experiences with being in the human realm, and the fact that dealing with each other, dealing with other human beings, is not just a wonderful event after the next. It's often very difficult, whether it's friends that we have or family members, mother, father, sister, daughter, grandchildren. It doesn't matter. There's usually some kind of strife at some point, some difficulty. And this relates very much to, of course, the noble truth of desire, the fact that not only that we suffer as the first noble truth, but the cause of our suffering is that we're often wanting something. We're often wanting something that we want something to be different. We don't want it to be the way that it is. We want it to be the way that we like and not the way that we dislike. And we often want the people who we relate to be the way that we like. We want them to be easy to deal with and not difficult to deal with. We want them to be pleasant and not irksome or painful in any way. But that's just not, just like illness, it just doesn't work that way. We don't often get what we want. And it would be an interesting teaching, wouldn't it, if that was like the Buddha's teaching, that somehow we're just going to, if we pray enough, or if we get the right fortune, we get the right life, we'll just get everything the way that we want. If that was the philosophy, then I think it would be doomed from the start. It wouldn't be a religion that would have lasted very long, because inevitably, always, one guarantee is that we just we won't get what we want. And that's often because we change, our desires change, what we want changes, how much we want, how little, whatever it is, that's constantly changing. So one of the things I was thinking about is this relationship we have to what the Buddha calls the worldly winds. So it's like gain and loss, fame and disrepute, praise and blame. And then the other can be pain and pleasure or liking and disliking. Those are sometimes translated differently. And the reason that we call these worldly is because they're not something that, there's something that kind of, it's not a religious experience. It's not something that we spiritually will be able to benefit from, really praise or blame or fame or disrepute. Seeking these things doesn't ultimately benefit us. It doesn't release us from suffering. And the more that we wrap ourselves up with these things, then the more suffering that we have. So I've been relating to that more recently about like expectations we have of others, or often just how things should go, how we want them to go, and how we can invest in that, you know, invest our feelings and our desires into things going our way. And even in a Buddhist monastery, it just, you can see that this still happens for yourself. I mean, I don't want to speak for all of you, but just looking at your own experiences, how often each day do we have something that doesn't go our way? So like I was thinking of Fearless Mountain, Abhayagiri is called Fearless Mountain, but it's also like you could say a monastery is just a place of not getting what you want. And there's nothing really special about that. But the thing that we're doing differently is we're experiencing that by putting a light on it. We're kind of looking at our own experience with regards to how we're constantly seeking to get, how we're seeking to get praise and avoid blame. So as I was thinking today of how funny that is, like even just those two things, praise and blame, because today one of the guests and a guest who's been here for long periods of time had told me that there was another guest who had stayed here for a long time and had written some unfortunate things about the monastery. And I thought, oh, that's too bad. That's very sad. Thinking about the monastery being criticized. And I actually read those things. And I thought, oh, yeah, that's pretty negative stuff. It felt very sad to me. And then I read another thing just the day before where somebody was praising one of the Ajahns here. And I thought, oh, that's very nice. That feels very good. But the key is that we really can believe that this is the right thing to kind of base our lives on. Like, oh yeah, if I get praised, I get an A+ in school, that's a good thing. And when I fail, that's a bad thing. When people criticize me, then that's what I want to avoid. I don't want to be criticized. And when people praise me, then, and they tell me how good I am or how wonderful I am, then that's what I just want to be surrounded by all the time. And this is an obvious thing, right? We just see it in our own lives. I'm not sure how many people, I mean, some people say they don't like praise, but I'm not sure how many people like blame. Perhaps people are embarrassed by praise, but if you compared it to blame or people really giving you a hard time about something, I'm not sure how many people could say that they, you know, they'd volunteer for that. And yet there's always something to learn from it. This is the Buddha's teaching. This is what he's constantly bringing to light, is that we can always come from a place of understanding rather than ignorance. And that comes from seeing, like, how do we react to these things? How do we react to somebody telling us we're so great? So, oh yeah, that feels really nice. I like that person. And there's this sense of like, I hope I get more of that. I hope I get more of that, those things said to me. Please tell me more. But then when we get criticized, it's, you know, it's exactly the exact opposite. Get me away from this person. I don't want to talk to this person ever again. I don't want them to be allowed in the monastery. And unfortunately, if we're just kind of being blown around by these winds, as the Buddha talks about them, the worldly winds, then we have no anchor in Dhamma. You know, we are relating to these things as if they are our source of refuge. So if I have a good reputation, that's my refuge. I have a refuge in that reputation. Unfortunately, what happens with that kind of refuge is it's just the roof is blown off. because having a good reputation is just based on very ephemeral things, things that fade and change. And it could even be that one is falsely accused or blamed for something that one didn't do. And so having that as a refuge, it doesn't ever work. And most of us can acknowledge this to a certain degree, but I think it's helpful to look in our own lives and see, like, where am I going for this refuge? Is it in these worldly winds? Surely pain and pleasure, those are things that are deep down inside of us, what we seek or avoid. Something that is incredibly present for us and just normal to go after is, how am I getting what I want? Am I gaining pleasure out of this? And you could be sitting here right now. You could be thinking about what is happening in your experience. Where's the pleasure? I want some more pleasure. Sometimes Ajahn Chund is funny and he makes me laugh. That feels good. But this is too serious for me. I don't really like it. Or it's too boring. Or whatever it is, we look at these things and sometimes we just believe them automatically all the time. How we relate to food, for example. You know, just sometimes we get overwhelmed and we can take food, like in the monastery, take some food and then we eat it. And then it's just been this whole level of just like, what's going to be good? What's going to taste good? What's going to be pleasant? And then on and on that goes until we wake up from a moment, oh, I'm full, or I don't want this anymore. And we might recognize that. But it's after the fact, saying, oh, wow, I really got lost for the last half an hour. And we see that sense of desire, that sense of pleasure-seeking that we have. And so when pleasure is a refuge, sensual pleasure is a refuge, or being praised as a refuge, seeking like pleasant feelings from people saying nice things to us, or somebody knows you, they say, oh, like, oh, I've heard really good things about you. Of course, this is just the natural phenomenon, is to feel pleasant out of that. But then when we get the opposite results, we feel terrible, or it's very unpleasant for us. And we can just not recognize that they're just the same thing. As much as we take a refuge into gain and fame and praise, as much as we're addicted to that or invested in that, then we have the exact opposite effect that's going to happen when the opposite occurs. So that's our investment. Our investment is to base our whole experience on these things that come from something that are just totally impermanent. They don't even really have a basis for any legitimacy. People can praise us, but that's just their impression of us. You know, they say, oh, that I really think you're the greatest whatever. And that's just their perception. It's just something that doesn't hold any water. And so these are just things that can continually be worked with. And I find that it's quite beneficial for me to look at it, because I can see in my own behavior, when I'm investing in things, the more I invest into these qualities, then the more pain that arises, the more dukkha that I experience. And I can see that very well. You know, living as a monastic in a monastery, I can say that that's not something that is just devoid. These worldly winds still can come up. Somebody says something to me, one of the monks says something to me, and it's unpleasant to hear, or it's not something that I want to hear, and then it's, oh God, I don't like that. And there can be hurt. And so then the way to deal with that is not to hurt the person back, or to kind of think that they're, you know, it's their problem. But it's actually to look, well, what is being expressed to me? Like, where am I responsible? Where's my own behavior? How am I responsible for this? Is there anything that I'm doing that is causing duress to the other person? And it's very hard, because we do hear, as we were talking about in tea, this phrase, you know, don't take yourself personally. Don't take your life personally. Don't take criticism personally. Don't take what other people say to you personally. Don't take harm personally. But because we are so confused in terms of what the person is, what, who and what we are, that phrase, it's good to reflect on, but it also reminds us that sometimes we don't have a lot of power in that domain. We don't have a lot of sense of how we can dispel that pain, because we are clinging around the self. We are clinging around who and what I am, and wanting to be praised, wanting to be liked by others. So one of the things that we talked about at tea time was that it's helpful to try to look at another person's experience, or try to understand them from where they're coming from. And in so doing, we move away from our sense of self. We move away from how it is I'm responding to them is like protective measure, protecting myself. And we move away from that towards the other person. Oh, are they suffering? Are they having a problem? Are they having a difficulty with what their experience is? And they're pointing at me, they're pointing at something that I'm doing, but it doesn't, in order to reduce that sense of taking it personally, we can try to understand another person as suffering. So it's having a sense of compassion around them. And it's a tough thing to do. It's not an easy thing to absolve, to resolve ourselves around, because we often feel protection. We need to protect ourselves. So it's helpful to try to recognize this. And one of the ways we can do that is just talking ourselves through it, saying, reminding ourselves, okay, I don't need to take this personally. I think it would be helpful to try to think about what is going on for the other person. But in the heat of the moment, it's very hard to deal with that. So right now in the monastery, we're preparing for a bit of a change. And a lot of us are anticipating that. And so some of the guests who are here are departing on the 24th. And that'll be the last day for a sort of guest season, for having people who are here. And then we'll have our winter retreat. We'll have a larger crew here, or not a larger crew, but about 8 members who are going to be looking after the monastery residents. And some of them are here now. And so there's this sense of things changing a bit, or preparing for a change, preparing what's it going to be like. What's this winter retreat? So people have been saying, what's the theme? What's the theme of the retreat? We usually have a theme. What's the schedule going to be like? Who's going to be the kitchen manager? Who's going to be the office manager? Who's going to be, on and on it goes. And so similarly, with these worldly winds, it's also interesting how we put so much into our future, into trying to determine how things are going to be. And ironically, just the same thing is, even if we know who the kitchen manager is, even if we know what the theme is, it's always going to be different. Our expectations are going to be different. I find it quite fascinating that as much as we know and we think that we can predict what's going to happen with us, we're always wrong 100% of the time. There's a 100% guarantee that we are always wrong with any kind of predictive measure, because the future is always slightly, it has to be always slightly different than what our expectations are. We'll never meet our expectations. And yet again, there can be this feeling of like, I'm going to try to figure it all out to make sure I know exactly what I'm going to do and what's going to happen, and then I'll feel all right. So there's also that sense of refuge in just knowing, that sense of like, if I get to know what the future is, and I'm not talking about the knowing around awareness, but if I can get it all right, if I can figure out what I'm doing on Tuesday, then I'll be happy. I won't have to worry so much. So the question is, how do we deal with just living with the unknown, with not knowing what's going to happen? So that on this day, on the 24th, several of people who are here right now are going to leave, but it's totally unsure what's going to actually happen. Are the cars going to actually get you there? Is somebody else going to plow into your car? What is actually going to occur? We don't know. We're never really sure. So in terms of working with that, then it's helpful in the mind to know like, oh yeah, when we tell each other like, oh yeah, I'm leaving on Tuesday, I'm going at this time. It's interesting to kind of work with even the language that we speak to ourselves with. I'm planning on going. That's the plan, but we'll see what happens. And, we have a calendar that we read out every day, and that's the plan. But it's just constantly changing. If you ask Tanrakito how often that his plans for the work period actually work exactly how he planned them, I'm not sure if he would say that they ever work out according to plan. And so if one is the work monk and wants things to work out each period, or is invested in that happening, then that's a very painful experience, rather than knowing like, oh, okay, these people didn't go to the particular work site, or somebody got hurt, or the work was, some tools got broken, or the work didn't quite get done. This is just always happening. And so like something like being the work monk in the monastery is a huge lesson in and of itself. Or if we ask Ajahn Sudhiro what it's like to be the guest monk, people say they're coming and they're staying for such and such a period of time, and then they don't show up, or they leave early, or they ask to stay longer. Sometimes they might indicate, you know, how they think they're going to do and how it's going to be, and it just doesn't work out that way. So all of these things, we can keep using everything that we're doing just as a way of trying to wake up a pathway towards really understanding anicca, or really understanding how we cause ourselves dukkha. And so it's each day is an opportunity, each moment is an opportunity in that. And from my own sense of how I operate, that this is where mindfulness can be lost, because we don't remember this all the time, right? So it's like, why did that happen? You know, why did it happen like that? I wanted it to go a different way. And it's just forgotten. It was never supposed to be how I wanted it. It was never going to go that way, because it's constantly impermanence, constantly slightly different than how I always wanted it, or how I wanted it. And so we keep trying to work with that over and over again. And the more that we are able to use this teaching around not being sure, or not seeking these worldly winds as our refuge, the less we suffer. And this is what ultimately letting go is. You know, how can we learn how to let go of all of the things that we're attached to? And so we see that when we invest in these things, in making things permanent and making things a refuge that don't have a refuge for us, we see that then when we recognize that, we see it very clearly, we then have the opportunity to let go in that moment. And we really have the ability to say, okay, this is not going to be beneficial for me. It's not going to be helpful. So perhaps as things are going on for the next few days, just maybe try to insert some different words into how you're speaking about things, either to yourself or to others. People say, when are you leaving? Say, oh, I'm planning to leave on Tuesday afternoon. Or I'm hoping to leave on Tuesday afternoon. What are you cooking today? I'm hoping to cook such and such or whatever. Or that's the plan. But we don't know. You know, we're not sure. And see if that changes, you know, if that kind of changes. Like, does that have any result for you? Does that have any kind of change in how you're perceiving things or understanding things? My own experience with that is that a lot of the language that I use or I'll speak about is without that. I often find it helpful. And I remember as the guest monk, I used to say that was the last line I would say to people. I'd say, if all goes according to plan, we'll see you on whatever. And occasionally people would write me back and they'd say, what do you mean? Like, I'm coming on that day. What plan are you talking about? Like, that's not just a plan. I'm arriving that day. And I said, okay, very well. We'll see. But, you know, it's quite helpful, because we just never know. We're not sure what's going to transpire. And this is like every hour of every day. So each time, you know, in an email, I sometimes will write the words, I'll see you Tuesday, but or whatever. And I kind of cringe. It's like, no, I don't know. That's always uncertain. So, I just try not to engage in that kind of language. But it's hard, because it's so normal to try to predict the future. You know, we just talk about the weather and it's just like, yeah, it's supposed to rain. And then it's dry. So all of these things are obvious to most of us. These aren't really new teachings or anything, but just a reminder to think about these worldly winds, think about our predictive energies and the way that we experience our worlds, in a way, our realities. And the sense that even though we're often wrong, it's helpful to use that, to see that mistake as an opportunity and to kind of bring it into consciousness and then say, okay, how can I work with this so that I'm not so reliant on my belief in, you know, a future prediction, or my belief in, or my refuge in these things being ultimately good or bad, you know, praise and blame and having a good reputation or just the most fundamental thing for us is just this search for pleasure and this avoidance of pain, and how much we can really wake up to the Buddha's teachings and see that our desires are so geared towards those things that we often are blinded by them. But then when we see that, we really have the opportunity to wake up and extricate ourselves from suffering. I just offer that for some words of reflection tonight.